Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
We're going to be discussing contraception, which is a very, very important topic. I think a lot of people think they know about contraception, but actually, people have lots of questions. So I'm so honored and so happy to have her in studio with me. Sibongile, welcome to Cliff Central.
Thank you, Cindy.
So just before we go into the meat of the topic for today, let's just get a bit of background on who are you, where are you from, why medicine, and yeah, let's start there.
I'm born in Tabanchu in the Free State. I'm the second of three. I did my medicine at University of Natal, qualified there, and eventually I'll need to go back home to work. You know how it goes. Did my internship in the Free State. My comm-serv, did a bit of private practice, and got hitched by a guy who convinced me to move to Johannesburg.
Okay.
Moved to Joburg. But when I got here, it was a bit tricky, you know. I couldn't go back to my private practice. I didn't find a spot. I didn't know who to I'll refer to if I need to. So I worked in the West Rand when I got to Johannesburg as a medical officer in the clinic.
Mm.
And then, voila, I got a job at the blood transfusion service, which I love, 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 love. And
really? What kind of stuff do you guys do with the blood transfusion?
Same, you know, it's amazing that blood transfusion, you discuss the issues with all the specialties. It's amazing that you find a neurosurgeon who you thought was like the most intelligent guy who will not even know how to give a patient when the patient bleeds. Or he wants to plan his surgery and he's scared of this and that. It was interesting. And during that time, then I did my my diploma in blood transfusion.
Mm.
But then, you know how it goes. If you haven't decided what you want to do, you always
keep
move on.
Yeah, on. That's so true.
So 2013, I moved and I joined Bayer Pharmaceutical as the medical advisor for women's health. So for the company, what I do is I advise your healthcare providers, your nurses, doctors, gynees on contraception.
Mm-hmm.
And another big market that we have that we focus on is endometriosis.
Oh, endometriosis. So we'll have to discuss that as well, because a lot of people are struggling with endometriosis. I mean, it's more than what I imagined. I think because I'm on Twitter a lot now, a lot more people are speaking out about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very big women's health problem.
Yes, because it's mainly undiagnosed.
Mm.
Women are told different things. When you complain about that pain, it depends who you talk to, you get different responses.
Mm.
And I don't think, as you remember, Cindy, in medical school,
we didn't focus much on it. That's true.
It was just that you only know how to diagnose it for the exam, you know, and you never think about it beyond that.
And it's debilitating effects on people's lives.
It's amazing.
It's
amazing when you see people that suffer from it and the stories that they tell you. You can't help but feel so sorry for them.
Mm. So now, just to get into contraception itself, I think, first of all, we need a lot of definitions of, you know, what is contraception? And I think we'll go through each one in detail. And, before we start going through each one, we'll define contraception and then we must talk about the pulling out method because, anyway, let's start with the definition of contraception.
Okay, contraception basically is prevention of pregnancy.
Mm.
So you,
simple and straightforward. Contraception is prevention of pregnancy.
Period.
Mm.
And the different methods, you know. You've got the what they call the traditional methods, like your pull-out method you just alluded to, where people believe that if I pull it out on time, you won't fall pregnant. And we've got people that traditionally would say, I know when I'm ovulating, you know, I know when I've got that temperature, you know, when the different changes that you get while you're ovulating, and just avoid that time.
Mm.
And any other time, I'm safe. You've got things that they call barrier methods, like condoms, male and female condoms. Some people prefer diaphragms. And then you've got the hormonal ones now, where you've got a pill. Different types combined or project one type of hormone only. You've got injectables. You've got, now recently the minister about 2 years ago launched the
implant. The implant.
So you've got a subdermal implant. You also have what you call intrauterine contraceptives.
Yes.
So you'll have that having a hormone and the others don't. So the others will have a copper instead. So you've got those different type of hormones. And, you know, the idea is to make assist the woman to choose the method suitable for them. So it's not like there's no blanket. So you shouldn't go to the doctor or the sister and they give you a method without even discussing with you. They need to make sure that it suits your lifestyle.
And that's an important concept for people to understand. You know, I think we come from a history where if you went to a clinic, it was one of two things. You either got the pill or the injection. But actually, I think more women were pushed towards the injection. People were just told, this is the contraception we have. Uzojova, and that's it.
Period.
That's and what, people didn't know that they had options.
And nobody discussed options with them. So lack of
that's
knowledge,
a history that we come from.
Not necessarily history. Mm. Even now, to date, you go to some clinic, you find a long queue going to contraception. When you get there, there are only two options in the room. The only time that the sister will use a pill if there's something wrong with the injectable. But the first option is always giving you one of the two injectables available in state.
And that's not right. That is not right because, as you've quite rightly pointed out, I think for me, contraception, you have this mixed bag. You try one thing, it doesn't work for you, you try the next thing. You look at your lifestyle, you look at so many factors, and you make a decision based on all of those factors.
Because that will assist. Remember now, what we don't want people to start a method. We want people to start and continue on
exactly.
the method. So once they give you the method that doesn't suit you, chances are you won't go back
to any form of contraception.
Exactly.
If you started off on the injection and you bleed continually for 3 months, trust me, if someone says to you, okay, but you know, try the pill or try the IUD or whatever it is, you are not going to agree. Because you've had 3 months of nonstop bleeding and a horrible experience and no one wanted to help you.
And nobody told you about other options when you were getting that injectable. That's what we're trying to say. We're trying to say, make sure that you put a woman on the method that suits them. And even prior to that, have a discussion to say, even if you're going to choose this particular method, just remember that A, B, or C might happen to you. You know, so if it happens to the patient, they don't get shocked. It doesn't feel like an out-of-body experience
exactly.
or something wrong with them and with the method, you know. So empowering the girls is very key.
Okay. So let's just start off with, let's start with the commonest used form of contraception, which is the pill, you know. And I think it's good for us to explain that there's the combined oral contraception, the different types of the pill. Because even even under the pill, people don't know that there are different categories of the pill.
Yeah, okay. So the pill, like you say, we've got combined. So it's got both the estrogen and the progesterone. So
yes.
You've got two type of hormones. And depending on the brand that you choose, you tend to have either 24 days with the hormones and the 4 without, or you've got the 26 with hormone and the 2 without, or you get 21 with hormone
and 7
without. So you've got the different regimen and different types. And that also,
and it's all brand specific.
Exactly. And that also must be according to your lifestyle. Because remember, women that on the pill most of the time like to skip
the period.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the lighter, the shorter the bleeding is, the more satisfied it has been shown that women are with their periods. No woman wants to bleed for a long time. Some actually prefer not to bleed. And then we've got your pills that have got one hormone, like a progesterone, which we normally recommend for women that are breastfeeding who wants to go onto a pill, because we don't want the other type of hormone, the estrogen, in that pill.
Yeah, because if you give a woman that's breastfeeding the combined pill, then you're going to affect her breast milk supply.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. So those are the two types of pills that we have in the country. But let me just go back and say, the pill is the most common contraceptive in the private sector.
Okay.
But in public sector,
it's the injectable.
It's the injectable. So 70% of women that go to the public clinic are on the pill, on the injectable.
On the injectable.
Yeah. And then moving on from the pill, you'll have the injectable. So the injectable have got only the one type of hormone. In this particular country, we only have two injectables.
The 3 months and the 2 months.
And the 2 months injectable. So the 3 months one, you come back to the clinic after every 3 months. The 2 months one, you come back to the clinic after 2 months. But obviously, the side effect profile of the two will differ.
Yes.
And it also differs with patients. So that must also be taken into account. And also available now, we've got the subdermal implant that was introduced about 2 years ago. So that gives you protection for 3 years.
Okay, so you put it in and for 3 years you don't have to worry about anything.
Exactly. So if you've got a young girl going to varsity, I mean, for her that's ideal. She doesn't want to go to a different town and start looking for the contraceptive clinic, you know. So you've got that, but obviously, like I said, like every other drug, side effect profile will differ, but that's the conversation that the patient will have with the person offering the method.
Okay.
So that has one type of hormone. And you must now remember that if you're going to give somebody a long-acting method, you need to remember that if she has problems, she must come back to you. I like the pill. You know, the pill, if I'm not feeling well, I'm vomiting, I just stop taking it.
But the thing is, but Sibongile, you would still want someone to come back anyway with any side effects.
Yes.
So that we can see if we have to adjust anything, if we have to change the method, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So if it's a long acting, it will definitely depend on the patient coming back. So they must be able to come back to you.
Okay, wait.
If they've got something like a subdermal implant, because they can't take it out at home.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
and you need a small surgical procedure to take it out.
Yes, and the counseling must be ongoing.
Yeah.
And then we've got another method. It's an intrauterine device. So depending on the brand that you choose, protection is between 5 and 10 years.
Oh, so some people can keep it in for 10 years?
The brands that are registered for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Some brands are registered for 5 years.
Yeah.
So even the choice of that copper IUD depends on the patient's need.
Mm.
And obviously the cost incurred by the method.
And the commonest one that I know of is the Mirena. I think Mirena is...
Mirena, it's not a copper. Remember,
it's a what?
It's got a progesterone.
Oh, yes,
so
yes.
We call it intrauterine system because it's got a hormone.
So that's an IUS.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So that's the slight difference in terminology.
So in the government sector, which one are we using?
We've got a copper one.
Okay, so we haven't introduced Mirena into the government.
It's because of the cost of Mirena.
Yeah.
There is a... tertiary institutions, you know, where they can use it, because then they select their patients accordingly. But because of cost and the number of women that the public sector caters for, obviously cost had to be taken into consideration, and the method that is still as effective but slightly cheaper to be made available to a greater number of women.
Is the copper.
So it's the copper.
Okay.
So in the clinics, any clinic you go to, they should be able to offer you a copper IUS or refer you to the nearest clinic that can offer you the method.
Okay.
Because we've tried to roll out the training to every little clinic in South Africa.
Okay. Of the insertion of the IUD.
Because that's key also. Remember, with the IUSs, they need to know how to insert it. And like they taught us, know when something's not right.
Yeah.
So sometimes we don't even dwell onto what might go wrong. We just need that to be recognized. Know when you've done something wrong. Then we can fix it, you know. So those are the currently available methods. And obviously now there's permanent ones like sterilization, which will require slight procedure. But now in South Africa, in the private sector, they still have, they've got the one, it's where it's called intrauterine coil. So they just put that coil
into
the
tubes. I've
never
heard of it, yeah.
They call it Eshore. That's the brand
They
name.
Call it
Eshore? Eshore.
Eshore, okay.
E-S-S-U-R-E.
Okay.
So it's a, it's coils.
Yeah.
They put through the vagina, the cavity, into the fallopian tubes. And then the tissue grows onto the coil, and that's how you get permanent sterilization.
Okay, so you block the access. Yeah.
That's basically you block the tubes. So ideally, the woman should be able to go back, unlike, you know, surgery or laparoscopy where they have to cut you theater and open up. That offers you another method, that shorter duration of insertion, quicker recovery.
Okay.
So you can be able to go to work the next day.
So the whole thing about the permanent methods, is the whole issue around reversal, because, okay, so I work in the field of HIV, and I know that there was a stage in the past where women were encouraged to sterilize because they were found to be HIV positive. So you had one child and you're encouraged, I don't have any more, it's going to affect your CD4 count and so on. We now know all of that to be untrue. So I've had women come to me asking if they can reverse these, the methods, that either the tying of the tubes or, you know, and on a, just realistically, reversal of steri, how you know, is it? I mean, I just generally refer them to the gynees, but I want to know, what's the success rate of a reversal?
You know, I've had one gynee in Durban saying the success rate is about 70%. But obviously it depends on the skill and the experience of the person that's going to reverse it. That's why we always say, if somebody wants to choose for permanent sterilization, you need to counsel them on the inability to reverse. So they need to be absolutely certain that they will never want to reverse in the future, because you can't guarantee. Let's say, for instance, even if you do reverse, we know between me and you that that damaged tube can also lead to an ectopic pregnancy.
Exactly.
So the woman's life can be at risk. You can reverse successfully, but then there's still the danger of an ectopic pregnancy.
Exactly.
Which is, like, you know, if not managed early, can kill a woman.
Yeah. So I think it always breaks my heart when I get messages from people asking me about reversal and so on. But anyway, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to CliffCentral.com and you're on the Health Hour with Dr. Cindy Fansale. You can tweet me at Doc Cindy, DocSindi. And I have Dr. Sibongile in studio and we're discussing everything around contraception. It's such a fantastic topic because we don't speak about it often enough. So I have a message from Claudia Thompson. So Claudia says that she chose the Mirena because, the pill made her very ill. She's had the Mirena for 2 years and she was told that everything is fine. She's been menstruating as normal. She expected not to menstruate, but she's been menstruating as normal. And she's also been diagnosed with PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. And, she used to have very bad periods, but now she seems to have to be having normal periods. She wants to know, is it true that the Mirena is going to last for 5 years?
That's the efficacy. It's been proven to be effective for 5 years. However, you must take it out after 5 years. So we don't know what happens beyond 5 years.
So have they done any studies on that?
Yes.
Okay.
It's registered for 5 years because there are lots of studies that were done to show that it's effective for 5 years.
Okay, then beyond 5 years, then the efficacy goes down. Okay. And in terms of her menstruation, she thought she would have secondary amenorrhea. So secondary amenorrhea is when you don't menstruate
at all.
At all. So she's not having that. She's still menstruating every month. So different people react differently, right?
Yes. And another thing, you must remember that it's not 100% of the patients will have amenorrhea.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a greater number of patients that will have lighter bleeds spotting here. And 20% of the women have proven to be amenorrheic after 3 months of using.
Oh, okay.
Amenorrhea.
So only 20%.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, and the gynae, unfortunately, will cancel you according to what he sees frequently. So it's
which
data.
Is the majority.
Exactly. So like
of amenorrhea.
Yeah, you know that most of my patients have
don't have periods anymore.
I mean, I've got Mirena myself and I've had it for 2 years.
And you're still bleeding.
Exactly.
Okay, Claudia. So you're fine. You're bleeding every month is fine, but the difference is you won't bleed as heavy as you used to. So there will be a difference of some sort. Okay.
Oh, yes.
So then we have a message from Kelly. So Kelly says, I'm in a long-term relationship. She was on Yasmin and then she was on Yaz over the last 6 years. So she wants to know that weight gain associated with contraception. And also she wants to know, is there any contraception other than condoms that doesn't result in weight gain or hormonal changes? Okay. So that weight gain with contraception use is the biggest reason that women stop using contraception. Okay.
Yeah, I know. But, Cindy, there are some contraceptives that will increase your appetite. We always say the older you get, you must run a little bit further and eat a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like the the trick to this. So if you see that there's a change in your eating habits and your diet, you just need to control it.
Yeah.
Because we always say the benefit must always outweigh the risk. So
yeah.
If you benefit more from preventing that pregnancy and you can do something about the weight, the diet, mm-hmm. you know, make a bit of an effort to make sure that you stay the same and you wear the same clothes for a while, I think that's what you must opt for.
And also, Sibongile, I think let's just be very clear as well, Oguti, because we know when we are manipulating your hormones, you are going to experience a change in eating habits. You are going to eat more. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was on the injection for 4 years and I craved fatty foods. And it's only now that I've been reading, I realized, oh, okay, the injection is the one that made me want to eat amakwinya every day, all night. You know, it makes, but unless you've been counseled around that, you won't know. The other thing as well, Kelly is using Yaz for her skin and it's working very well for her. So she's worried about stopping Yaz for the weight gain, but then, you know, the skin flare ups, it's done very well for her skin.
Yeah, you see, the nice thing about Yaz is that registration for 3 indications. So it's not only contraceptive, but it's also indicated for, it has shown that it treats the moderate acne in women seeking contraception.
Okay, so Yaz and Yasmin, what's the difference between the two? Because they're not the same. I think people need to know that.
Okay.
Yasmin and Yaz are not the same.
Okay, Yaz and Yasmin, the difference is that the dose of the estrogen in the two is different.
Okay, so
it's slightly less with Yaz.
So which one has a higher
estrogen?
Okay.
It's Yasmin.
Okay.
And yes, it's a 24-4 regimen, meaning that it's got 24 hormones and 4 hormone-free.
Okay, so 4 days of bleeding.
Yeah, so it's got 4 hormone-free days. So you might bleed before just
after. Oh, okay.
4 hormone-free days, and it's indicated for 3 things. So contraception.
Yeah.
mild to moderate acne, actually, in women taking contraception, and PMDD. You know that fluctuation of your moods, the headache, the bloating.
So yes, helps with it.
Because it's got extra days of a hormone. So the you know, the more, the longer you take the hormones and the less hormones-free interval you have, you get the benefits of having those hormones during that hormone-free interval. Remember, yes means 21.
Hormone and then yes is 24.
Yeah, okay. So they've shortened the hormone-free interval.
Okay. So now, is Yasmin being taken off the market?
No, no, it hasn't.
Oh, it hasn't. So it's still, but so
still
why is it the,
great?
Because I know that with the patients that I see, the majority of them are now on yes. It's like I've seen a shift over the years.
We've got both available in the market, but you know how people go. The new, innovative, you know, the young girls. They want what's recent, what's latest, what has been mostly talked about. And the skin issue. You know, with Yasmin, women were saying that our skin, you know, the skin clears up, but it was not registered.
For that specific. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, thank you for clearing that up. So we have Michael Flex in studio. So Michael has some genuine questions around contraception, Sibongile. So let's take a few of Michael's questions. Hello, hi. Michael.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. What's up?
Good, good. Is my mic on?
Mic
4.
It is on. I've pressed.
Hello? Is this one working?
Yes, it is.
Okay, let me use this one.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm really, really interested. So let me give you a bit of a background. I was a bit of a late bloomer. So I'd say I started having sex much later than everybody else. So I didn't know as much as them. And I always had in my mind that you always use a condom. There's nothing else but a condom. Then later on in life, just a conversation with friends and that, they started telling me, like, they don't use condoms. Like, they're friends, whoever they're doing it with, is on contraceptives and this. And then I started asking questions and I kept getting more and more confused. And then I started asking the girls the questions, and some would say no, they're on the pill. Some would say they've got that copper ring, and I just don't understand how things work, you know.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Like, what is the percentage of getting pregnant if you're on this and that? And should you just stick it to one rule, only condom? I mean, putting aside STDs, like, let's take that completely out the picture. These are, like, my friends trust their what's and
they've
stuff.
They've tested.
Yeah.
Trust is not, shouldn't be there. The issue, they've tested and they know they're clear. So what happens is we've got a nice website, you know, that's, like, ideal. It's www.yourlifenow.co.za. So that that website actually gives you all the information. So it will give you the method, and when you click on it, it actually gives you how effective it is and how often you must use it. So we know that the pills, when they're used correctly, they've got 99% protection.
99%. 99%.
That's, yeah. But so correctly means same time every day.
Mm.
You don't forget the pill. You, when you vomit it out, you take it. When you know, when you get diarrhea, when you go to a doctor, they give you antibiotics. You tell them you're on the pill and you take precaution. That's perfect use of the method, right?
And the antibiotic part is so important. If you're on antibiotics, you need to have told your doctor that you're on the pill so that you can use barrier protection on the days. Yeah, the days that you're taking the antibiotics.
And 7 days
beyond. 7 days beyond, because then you'll end up with the baby.
But does it matter, like, this might be like a stupid question, but whether she's on the pill, are you supposed to pull out? Are you supposed to, like, actually come inside her? Is there the depth that maybe you, like, push on the, when you, you know? I don't know if that's a stupid question.
You know what? Actually, I think what you need to explain to Michael is what the pill actually does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you need to explain to him what the pill does, because, yeah.
Okay, so
what does the pill do?
Yeah,
I think let's start there.
For pregnancy to occur, you must have the egg and the sperm, right? So the egg must come out of the ovaries towards, and then the sperm meets it halfway. So what the pill does, it prevents that release, so you don't get the egg, you know? So you don't get the egg, so even if the sperm comes, then it will just eventually die in there or come out.
Yeah.
So it prevents ovulation, so there's nothing to fertilize.
Okay.
That's the main reason, the main mode of action of the pill.
Yeah, so you get that, Mike.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter whether you inside, outside.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter where the cum goes, as long, like, as she's not fertilized.
And then other methods, like the coil.
Yeah, so
the coil, we've got two types. Like I said earlier, we've got the one that has copper.
Yeah, I know that one.
And then you've got one that has a progesterone, so it's a Mirena, right? So they work differently.
Which one's better?
The efficacy is the same. It just depends on the woman. So if, for instance, you've got a girl that's a heavy bleeder, you'd avoid the copper one. and give her the progesterone, because the copper one might make you bleed even more. So the way the copper one works is because it's in the cavity, and the cavity does not like things inside it. There's that constant irritation. And because even if the fertilization happens, there's no way to implant. If it's sitting correctly, there's no way to implant. So you've got the union of the sperm and the egg, and they're supposed to be somewhere for the baby to start growing. So that doesn't happen. So it comes out. The same way works with the progesterone one. So the one that the other quality, the Mirena one, the Mirena qual, also works the same way. So it thins the lining. So the lining, that's where the implantation should happen for the zygote to have the blood supply and start growing. So you don't have that lining when using the Mirena. So that's the two way that it works. So even if there is fertilization for some reason, and another thing that the Mirena does, it thickens the mucus. So the sperm will have difficulty accessing the cavity. Yeah.
It's like double barrier.
Exactly. Yeah. So the key thing is, if you're on the pill, those are the important things you must remember. Take it on time, every time. Tell the doctor you're on an antibiotic.
What about alcohol and the pill?
But there's no proof.
Because I heard that some myth that if you take alcohol and you're on the pill, then it takes that percentage down at the effectiveness of the pill.
The only thing that alcohol will take down is your memory to remember to take that pill.
So if you hang over and you forget to take it the next day, and the next day, then you can have problems.
Is there anything else? So alcohol doesn't take down the effectiveness. Mm-hmm. Does anything take down the effectiveness of it?
Some drugs. Some girls will be on Accutane. And antidepressants. I mean, we're living in an era where girls are under pressure. And depression, it's arrived. And anti-epileptics.
So you need to make sure you tell your doctor what other medication you're on before you choose a form of contraception. We need to know all of that information. That's why you can't leave any information out when you go for a checkup or a consultation. You have to tell everything.
So these, what's it, the Mirena and the...
Mirena.
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 Yeah.
And the copper wire. How effective are those?
They are highly effective because, remember, they don't depend on what happens. They don't depend on what drugs the girl will take. They don't depend on the timing. So once it's in, it sits in there for 5 years. And after 5 years, then you take it out.
And are they expensive?
Yeah, Mirena is expensive. Mirena. It's about $2,000.
Which is more effective? Did I ask this
already?
They're
the same. The efficacy is the same because they don't depend on the user. You see.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The blood flow or something like that.
The efficacy is the same of the two. And costs, the copper one is slightly cheaper than the
Mirena.
Is it $2,000 just for the copper thing, or does that include doctor's bills and everything?
Just for the thing. So you go and you buy it at Dischem and you take it to your doctor, and your doctor, you must
pay
your
doctor. You buy it at Dischem?
Yeah, you can buy it at any pharmacy, but your doctor must write a script for you. Mm-hmm. Then you get it, then you must go back to your doctor and pay again for the doctor to insert it for you.
And how long does it take to insert? What's the procedure to insert it? Do you have to go under anesthetic, local?
It depends. Majority would be done in the doctor's rooms. I mean, 5 minutes
by
is
GP,
enough.
Yeah.
5 minutes.
Five minutes is enough for
it's
that.
It's a tiny little thing.
But then it depends on the patient. Remember, anything can happen while you're trying to insert. It might be a difficult insertion. The patient might be so anxious that she just can't sit still for you to do it.
Oh, yeah,
so in those cases, doctors opt to do it in theater. If the patient insists on the method, I really want to do this, but I just, you know.
Yeah. Is it sore?
Depends on the patient. I mean, and a friend of mine, it's so scared of the Mirena.
Yeah.
When I went for my insertion, which is the story I shouldn't be telling, she called me and said, "What are you there for?" So I told her, "I'm here to get my
Mirena."
Done.
Yeah.
Oh, you must get back up. Who's going to drive you home?
Ooh. Oh, so she had a very painful experience.
No, she didn't even. No,
she hasn't done it. Oh, and she's telling you to get back up.
Exactly. And obviously, I was anxious now because I didn't expect that. I went in 5 minutes done. While we're talking, they call it verbal anesthesia. So the doctor talked me through. We spoke about anything and everything under the sun.
And then boom, it was done.
Boom, it was done.
Oh, that's cool. Verbal anesthesia. I like
it. Yeah, it was so, it's patient dependent and the confidence you have in your doctor, I suppose, and the mere fact that you know that he's experienced in this makes things easier.
Or maybe you were expecting something so bad, Bongile, and then, you know, you got in there and it was much easier than what you...
But I didn't even feel anything. Like, there was no discomfort that I can remember because we were chatting and don't remember stopping talking and saying, ouch.
Oh, okay. You know, that's
so
encouraging.
It's all patient dependent, I think.
And then age-wise, is there an age limit for inserting the IUD and or the IUS?
That's the oldest myth. You know, they used to say you must have 3, 4, 5 kids before you get to the copper.
Yes.
Now we're saying every woman who needs the method must be given.
Wait, does the copper now affect pregnancy later on in life?
No,
no, it doesn't. Yeah, no, it doesn't. No.
But they used to say, you know, for that, for the women that have had more kids, give them the copper, they'll be gone for a while.
So shouldn't more parents be giving their, like, let's give it an age of 16 to 7-year-old kids the copper ring just to...
Why parents? Why can't a girl go to a doctor and have a discussion? Well,
at 16, you still don't know what you want in life. You're still making mistakes.
But you're on Google all the time. I mean, this is the generation. This is the generation.
I know if I have a daughter, as soon as she turns the age where I think it's happening, I'm going to send straight for the copper wire.
Yeah, well, Mike, that's a very contentious issue. Not everyone agrees with that.
Why?
But wait, Bungile, so you're saying, Oguti, it doesn't, age is not a factor?
It should not. So we're saying that the method must be given. You know, the package inserts of the registered product will say that your coppers are not your first choice for nulliparous women.
Okay, so for a woman that hasn't had any kids.
That is not first choice.
Okay.
But not contraindicated. So you must get the difference. So if the young girl can't be on any method, she can't be on the pill because of the side effect profile, I cannot take an injectable because of the side effects, and the only method that will work for her, it's an IUS or IUD.
Then we can go for it.
Go for it.
Oh, okay. So Michael wants to know, okay, why you know, parents shouldn't be sending their kids for contraception. Well, the thing is, the age of consent or contraception in South Africa is 12.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're 12 years old and, you know, you can go to clinic and ask for contraception.
But are you even fertile at 12?
Mm-hmm. The moment you start menstruating, Mike, you're already producing those eggs and so on. So you are. And that's why we have 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds falling pregnant.
Yes, yes.
But the discussion, the problem is the discussion around contraception doesn't start at that age. It should actually, but it doesn't.
Mm.
So that's a situation we find ourselves in.
What if you're on the pill and you have the ring or
the
Mirena?
Why would you want to do that?
Yeah, so we generally discourage that.
Why'd you discourage that?
Because you're now giving... Remember now, all these methods are artificial hormones.
Mm.
So you don't want to give a woman a lot of artificial hormones which haven't proven to be effective or to benefit the girl. So there is no study that will take two hormones and give to a woman and say that it's more effective. So you want to prevent the pregnancy, but you don't want to harm that woman.
Yeah, so you can't. You don't need two hormones to make sure that you have. But what I encourage my clients to do is that you can have the hormonal contraception, but you must still use condoms, because yes, hormonal contraception prevents pregnancy, but barrier contraception like condoms prevents HIV.
Pill.
Yeah, the pill, the injection, the Mirena. I always say let's use dual contraception. Right? So use the hormones, but also use the barrier contraception.
But say they both got tested, they didn't have AIDS. Would you then say...
HIV, and I'm like, you don't test
HIV
for AIDS.
Or anything. Would you, or any STD, would you then say, okay, it's fine for you to have sex without a condom. I trust that whatever pill you're on is working. Would you guys be okay with that?
Well, if people are testing regularly and testing every 3 to 6 months, then yeah, that's fine. I think most people who are testing regularly are in that situation. If people, a lot of people in long-term relationships probably opt for hormonal contraception and actually leave the barrier contraception out completely. That's my experience.
And then when you have this ring put in, I don't know if I just asked this, can you have sex straight away? Is there any wait?
With the ring, I'm not quite sure, but I know that we always say, because I deal more with the intrauterine devices, we always say the first 24 hours.
Rather stay away from sex.
I'm not sure about the ring.
No, I don't know much. But I think what he means is the Mirena or the IUD. I think for the first 24 hours, no 24 sex. Hours. Just to see what happens. Mm. It might plop out. I don't know. Anything could happen. Just rather stay away from sex until you've settled down.
I really didn't know it was that effective. I thought it just like a percentage chance. I didn't know that it's like effective, that it actually works.
No, it actually does work. 99%. And also, I think, Spongler, please explain to Mike about the, you know, so you've got you've put in the Mirena or the copper tea. How long must you use barrier protection before you can stop, you know, before you know that you're not going to fall pregnant if you have sex, unprotected sex? We need to, even the pill.
Yeah. We usually say if you're going to start the method on the first day of the menses, so if I'm menstruating on the 28th, it's my first day, and I start using the method then, and I've got a 3 to 5 day cycle, efficacy is immediate. So if I start on the first day of my menses, I can... Not even after my menses now, you know. We're assuming that you're not going to have sex while you're bleeding.
Yeah.
And so we say the effect of the contraceptive method will be almost immediate.
Yeah.
So there won't be a need. However, if you're going to start the method somewhere mid-cycle, so they've proven that you're not pregnant and you want to be on this method, then once you start, you must at least use a barrier method for 7 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Say, what was I going to say? It had to do with the pill. What was it? Oh, say the woman misses one of the pills. I know a lot of girls freak out when they miss one pill. Say they're having active sex and they miss a day or something.
Mm.
Can they catch it up? Do they? What
do they
what,
take two? Yeah. I always get asked that question. Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah. Oh, okay. What happens is it depends, obviously, when you miss the pill.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, like I said, you've got the hormone-free interval. So if you miss the pill after the hormone-free interval, chances of falling pregnant are very high. So you always say if it's less than 12 hours from the time that you take it, just take the second one. But if it's beyond 12 hours from the take that you, if you normally take it at 8 in the morning and you only remember in the afternoon, you know, then we say use a barrier method for 7 days.
Yeah. Mm. So that's always your backup.
Yeah. So just remember that when in the circle did the girl miss the pill? However, if the girl has missed the pill on day 20,
should she go to a doctor straight away?
Yeah, it's advisable to go to a doctor, but this is the information that you can find in the package insert. They tell you exactly what to do once you miss the pill.
Yeah, it's all written down.
So we
down.
Advise the girls, to, when once you buy the new pack, keep the package insert and you'll throw it away with the next pack that you buy.
What doctor did you go to? Do you have to go to a GP or do you have to go to a gynecologist?
A GP should be. Even a nurse. We go to centers that have got nurses, they'll be able to advise.
And for the ring to be put in, do you have to go to a gynecologist or can your GP do it?
GP can do it, mm-hmm. Yeah. For the IUD or the IUS, you can go to a GP.
And then I have one last question. What is the morning after pill?
Okay. The morning after pill is literally that. So it's the morning after an oops. You realize, oh my God, I didn't protect myself.
Is this in that pack for the, what's her names? The pills?
No, you buy it separately.
Oh, this is a separate
thing. It's a separate, yeah. It's got high doses of hormones, yeah.
Mm. So we encourage girls not, but don't make it a habit because, you know, it's easy to find it over the counter. You go to Clicks, you find it over the
counter. But they keep a register, hey, Mike. I must tell you, if you go for the morning after pill, they're going to ask for your ID, they're going to ask for your address, and they keep a register in the system.
You fill in a form.
You fill in a form. And so you can't keep on going to, you can't go pharmacy hopping for the morning after pill because at the end of the day, it's not something we want you to be using regularly, you know.
And it's bad for your health. I mean, it's a high dose.
What does it do to you?
It just makes, literally, it prevents the egg from implanting. It makes the mucus slightly thicker. So it just makes the process of pregnancy to happen
very difficult.
Very difficult.
I heard that you're only allowed to take 3 morning after pills in your life. Otherwise, it starts affecting your chances of becoming pregnant later on.
No.
Or is that just a myth?
It's a myth.
I'm getting fed with myths throughout like my youth.
Everyone, actually, Mike, it's not you alone. No, that's not true. That's not true. And I mean, I think in my setting, I always say to the nurses that we are not there to judge who's coming for the morning after pill regularly. I'm just glad that people do come in for it, but we need to do some education as well. You come in for it, there must be a little lecture on, okay, what happened? Why did you have another oopsie? You know, what's going on? Can you make sure that next time you use condoms, why aren't you on the pill? Or the, you know, so we need to keep such conversations going. And that's why I'm so glad that you're here asking all these relevant questions.
When you take this morning after pill, do you feel sick? Like, yeah. Do you vomit stuff?
Yes, you will.
Because we're giving you a high dose of hormones. Vomity, so, you might spot, you feel moody. Yeah.
Miserable. So we always say, like Cindy says, use that as an opportunity to get a woman on the long-term method.
Yeah.
More
long-term
reliable.
Is the pill or and a more the
reliable.
Ring.
Anything. In, the yeah, pill, well, the injectable, the ring, anything.
There
reliable.
Are only 3 options. There's the pill and the those pill, 2 rings.
No, there's the pill. There's an intrauterine device.
What's that?
The loop and the one that you...
The Mirena. The one that you keep putting the ring.
And there is a ring.
There is, yeah, but I don't think we've got the ring inside. I haven't heard of the Nuva. Is it called Nuva?
Nuva ring.
Nuva ring. Yeah. Oh, okay. So, Mike and the ring.
So there is a ring. So you're right. You mustn't assume that you are mistaking the ring for. So there is a ring also.
Yeah, yeah,
there's a patch. You patch it on for 7 days, take it off, and the patch
goes
on.
No, how effective can that be?
Very effective.
That's very effective
because it
provides you, make sure the patch stays on your body.
On the skin, and the edge must be stuck.
Flex.
I've never heard of anybody using a patch.
Haven't you heard of a patch?
In my life.
Okay. So there's a patch available. So we've spoken about the pill, the patch, the injectable, the ring, and the intrauterine devices, and there's a subdermal implant.
The implant on.
What's a subdermal implant?
So it's like a matchstick size device with which has a hormone that they just push under just under your skin, so you should be able to still feel it when it's in. Push under the skin,
and that lasts for 3 years.
3 years.
What does it like? Release hormones?
Yes, like, exactly.
And then what? You have to take it back out and refill it, then put it back in.
You don't refill it. You take it out after 3 years, and then you put another one in.
I think the top two ones that like I'd like
for your daughter,
is the ring and the pill.
Oh, why?
I don't know. They sound so like effective. I wouldn't trust a patch. I wouldn't trust this little thing going under your skin.
Oh, Mike, stop killing me. But yeah, we'll go to the website and we'll look through everything.
Mm-hmm. What was the website again?
www.yourlifenow.co.za.
Yourlifenow.co.za. Okay, I'm going to go look at it now. Thank you so much, Docs. I appreciate
You're
that.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, no, we'll be back after this discussion.
This is CliffCentral.com. Health Hour on CliffCentral.com.
Okay, well, we're back with Dr. Sibongile. Sibongile, someone says here that if you don't menstruate, how is the vagina going to clean itself?
Okay, let's just first discuss what menstruation is. So basically, menstruation is the lining of the womb inside. You get the hormone stimulating the lining of the womb to grow. And then if you don't have a pregnancy that has to be embedded there, that gets shed. So that's the menstruation. Menstruation is that lining.
It's the shedding of that
of
lining.
That lining. So it means that if you don't have that lining growing, you've got nothing to shed. That's why if with some methods like we said, Mirena, people have a tendency not to menstruate because it works more locally. So if there's nothing to shed, you won't menstruate.
Okay. So at least we've cleared that up. Mm. So now, during the last 15 or so minutes of the show, we must discuss endometriosis. I think this is a problem that affects many more women than we know. And let's just go through it. What is endometriosis? And how does contraception help? What else is there to help with endometriosis?
Okay, endometriosis basically is the lining of the womb grows in areas outside the womb.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you menstruate, the hormones affect those that lining.
Mm-hmm.
So even wherever it is, it's going to bleed, it's going to grow, and it's going to cause pain. And depending where it's sitting, you find people complaining for things that vary from pain during menses, pain during sex, or just chronically being in pain.
Mm.
And the pain, it's not equal to how much endometriosis you have. So you can have a lot of endometriosis and no pain. Or you can have a little bit of endometriosis and
have
severe
excruciating
pain. And it affects your fertility depending where it's sitting too. Remember now, it sits and blocks this area, blocks your tubes. You can't, if it's sitting outside the tube and there's fibrosis
and pressure,
and pressure on, so it affects the fertility. So most people, when we grew up, you'd have this severe menstrual pains and you'll be told, oh, my mom had it, my grandmother had it.
It's just in the family.
Exactly. And as soon as you have kids, it will go away. Don't worry. So some people opt to have kids early because this pain is just devastating for them. But we know that's one, it's a myth. So endometriosis can only be diagnosed one way. So the doctor must actually go in there with a scope and look at it and take a piece of it to the lab.
It to pathology.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it has been proven that it affects 1 in 10 women, endometriosis, but it takes up to 7 years for a diagnosis to be made.
Oh no.
Because depending who you go to. So if people believe that it runs in the family, it means that your chances of getting help are also reduced with it. Secondly, most women go on a contraceptive method because, like we say, the contraceptives will prevent that lining from growing. That gives you a temporary relief because you're on a contraceptive method, the pain goes away. Because remember, people only seek help because there's pain.
Mm.
No pain, no doctors will be visited, right?
Mm.
So because of the pain that you get, people tend to go see a doctor. And if they go on a contraceptive method, the pain goes away, they don't menstruate, and then it's another 20 years to say, in fact, I remember 5 years ago, I used to have this pain, but it stopped, and now that I'm trying to have kids.
So you're basically just masking the symptoms.
Exactly.
Mm.
So there are different guidelines. We doctors work on guidelines. So there are different guidelines that will tell you how to treat it. So you've got both medical management and surgical management.
Okay.
Surgery, obviously, they go in there, scrape it off, take it out, cut it out, and then you should be fine, okay. Right? Medical management, it's what helps. Some people will tell you that when I've got my periods, everybody that has had dysmenorrhea, which is pain during menses, have got their own personal concoction they use.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody will tell you, I use this and that.
I mix this and that.
Yes, and that combination works well. Yes, you know, I sit on top of the bucket with hot water.
Steam.
Exactly, so anything to take the pain away. But somebody with endometriosis will tell you that nothing works. Sure. Like they take a handful of pills on a daily basis.
And nothing works.
Nothing works. And when it gets bad enough, they can't bathe themselves. They can't feed themselves. And they need someone to take care of them. So it depends who you talk to. And how severe
that
symptoms
are. So that's how excruciating the pain is.
It can be that horrible for some people. You can meet somebody who says, I've already had, I'm 20, but I've already had like 6 surgeries to get rid of the endometriosis. So it depends on the severity and who you speak to and what their different experiences are. But it ranges from just a mild, you know, pain cramping during my menses to that severe. I need surgery because I get at least a break. And the unfortunate thing about endometriosis, it's not curable, so you can't cure it, and it recurs.
Oh, yeah.
So you can go operate, take it out, and after a few years, it comes back. And it doesn't matter who took it out. And we always say, try as much as you can to go to somebody who has a special interest and is well-trained
in endometriosis. Okay, so a gynecologist
who's well trained in endometriosis will be able to assist you.
Okay.
Because any other gynae can go in there and diagnose it and come out. And, you know, lack of experience with removing, they can remove. Because remember now, they remove what they see. Ne? So if they don't see it, it will still remain in there.
So you need someone who's got a special interest in endometriosis. Okay.
And experience.
Okay.
And different, you know, they've got, like I said, you've got different ways of managing it. But recently, there has been a tablet that has been systemically proven to effectively treat endometriosis.
Okay.
So it's a once-a-day tablet. You take it throughout. So it's a 20 pack of 28. You just continuously take it.
And is it a hormone? What is it?
It is a progesterone in the pill. So it's a progesterone-only pill once a day for 28 days, and you just continue taking it over and over again. Obviously, because it's a pill and it's a progesterone, it's foreign to the body, different people will react differently.
Okay, so there is a side effects profile to be considered.
Okay. And different people will tell you. I mean, you'll have one person that says, from a handful of packs within 2 months, I was only taking 3 tablets with this particular pill. And then over 6 months, I'm only taking the pill. You know? So it, for some people, it works well. And some gynecologists actually believe that you operate on the patient, remove the lesions, and then start them on the pill. Because remember, like I said, it recurs. So start them on the pill to be able to manage the disease.
Okay. And in this pill, what's the name of the pill?
They call it Visanne.
Visanne.
V-I-S-A-N-N-E.
Okay, I'm going to definitely look it up. And in terms of cost, would medical aid cover a cost like this? How would it work?
Unfortunately, in South Africa, most medical aids don't cover even contraception. I mean, they give you a certain percentage of the, like it's 100 rands flat rate to say if you've got your own contraceptive method, 100 rand is there for you to use. And some will take it out of savings. And you know, you've got kids on medical aid. You don't want to lose the savings because of contraception.
But even I mean, the contraception is not 100 bucks though.
Yeah, but they some medical aids will only pay for it out of savings. So it is, and you know what always baffles me is that the medical aid does not even hesitate to pay for you to go and deliver in a hospital. And the delivery, it's far expensive than contraception, but they opt to pay for you to deliver, whether or not it's an unplanned or planned, they never ask you that.
But contraception. Which is a lousy 200 rand a month.
250 or something.
Or whatever it is, and you know. And yeah, and this really, it puts the options of women down, because I mean, if you can't use, say for example, you're on a pill and you need to use Yaz, for example, now that you can't, because you can't afford it, you then stay on this other pill, or you stay in the injection, or stay on something that you're not, that's not working for your body.
Exactly. Unfortunately, that's how the medical aids in South Africa operate.
Yeah. And then in terms of the so have you met any patients who are on Visanne? Have you seen any?
We get calls. Okay. Obviously, yeah. I'll get a call from somebody who wants to know something. So either they'll call, and we've got a helpline that we have. So there's a sister on the other end. So the patient will call because they've got endometriosis and they've heard about Vizen, and they want to ask some questions, or they've been started on Vizen and they've got some complaints, or they want to compliment. So you find that lady that says to you, you know, this has done me so well, I can't even afford to buy a pack, but my local pharmacy has agreed that I can buy half a pack at a time.
Aww.
So you know, when you hear stories like that, you can see that this is like a wonderful drug for some people, obviously. We're not saying that there are no side effects.
Mm.
But if you cancel the woman on the side effect of any pill, when they do get it, they tend to stay on it.
Because they know what to expect.
Exactly, versus somebody who has no idea. And you get those that says, I'd rather go for surgery than be on this pill.
Oh, okay.
You know, because of
But as long as someone knows what to expect and what's going on.
That's what we always say. That's why, you know, I always say to people, that's why you find that contraceptives are not over the counter.
Mm.
So they must be scheduled and prescribed by someone. Mm. And that's the opportunity for the doctor to discuss exactly during that particular time.
Yeah. And the last thing, Swongile, contraception and depression, or worsening of depression symptoms. Have you heard anything about that? Have you seen anything?
There are some papers that do describe that women that are on antidepressants tend to be worse on contraception. But remember also that there's drug-drug interaction.
As well.
So you want to limit giving hormonal methods to women on some antidepressants.
Okay.
Because of the drug-drug interaction. Because either the pill will be less effective or the antidepressant will be less effective.
Okay.
So you always weary the drug-drug interaction.
And the other thing that I want to end off with. So in terms of skin, okay, so skin issues. I have a 13-year-old with severe acne. So you say that putting her on something like Yaz would actually assist with the acne.
Treatment of moderate acne. It's a registered indication.
Okay. So that's something to think about and something to advise parents if they have a teen with like really severe acne.
Mm. Okay. Moderate acne.
Moderate acne. Okay. Mm. Okay. That's something to think about. Okay, Simone, so where can people find you? If the people need to have any questions, where can they email you?
Okay.
Give us your details.
My work telephone number 011-921-5203. And my email address is sibongile.nomganga@bayer.com.
Okay, Sibongile, thank you so much for a very, very informative show. Thank
you. You're welcome, Cindy.
Keeping it real on cliffcentral.com.